On this 25th day of January, 2012, in New Dwarka, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 17, entitled Mother Parvati Curses Chitraketu, text number 37.
Iti
Bhagavato
Devya
Patishaptum
Alantamaha
Murdhna Sajagrihe
Shapam
Etavat Sadhu Lakshanam Iti Bhagavato Devya Patishaptum Alantamaha Murdhna Sajagrihe
Shapam
Etavat Sadhu
Lakshanam.
Translation. The great devotee Chitraketu was so powerful that he was quite competent to curse Mother Parvati in retaliation. But instead of doing so, he very humbly accepted the curse and bowed his head before Lord Shiva and his wife. This is very much to be appreciated as the standard behavior of a Vaishnav. Please repeat. The great devotee Chitraketu was so powerful that he was quite competent to curse Mother Parvati in retaliation. But instead of doing so, he very humbly accepted the curse and bowed his head before Lord Shiva and his wife. This is very much to be appreciated as the standard behavior of a Vaishnav. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Upon being informed by Lord Shiva, Mother Parvati could understand that she was wrong in cursing Chitraketu. King Chitraketu was so exalted in his character that in spite of being wrongly cursed by Parvati, he immediately descended from his airplane and bowed his head before the mother, accepting her curse. This has already been explained. Narayana Parasarve Nakutashjana Bibhyati. Chitraketu very sportingly felt that since the mother wanted to curse him, he could accept this curse just to please her. This is called sadhu lakshanam, the character of a sadhu or a devotee. As explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, trinad api sunichena, taror api sahishnuna. A devotee should always be very humble and meek and should offer all respect to others, especially to superiors. Being protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee is always powerful, but a devotee does not wish to show his power unnecessarily. However, when a less intelligent person has some power, he wants to use it for sense gratification. This is not the behavior of a devotee. Om Jnana Tivarandasya Jnanandana Shalakya Chakshur Unmilatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. A spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. Here the principle of tolerance is being illustrated by this pastime of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We see that Chitraketu has come a long way, that in his household life, before you remember the story, he was so desirous of a son. He had millions of queens, but no son. And this is the worst thing for a king, to not have any heir. So he was in complete anxiety. And then finally he was able to get the son by the blessing of the great sage. But the son's name was Harshashoka. And great jubilation was there when the son appeared. And The wife who gave birth to the son became his favorite son. The other queens became envious, and out of madness of envy and jealousy, they killed this little boy, little infant in the crib. Shoka. It comes to Shoka. Lamentation. Unbelievable. So in that state, Narada Muni comes and gives him good instruction and also brings the child, the soul of the child, back to give Chitraketu more instruction. And then Chitraketu becomes self-realized. He becomes, and very quickly, he realizes the personality of God in the form of Sankarshan. And then he leaves. He leaves the kingdom and everything and goes traveling in his airplane. And so then we see that he, in traveling around, he comes upon Shiva and Parvati, and they're surrounded by great sages, and Parvati's sitting on Shiva's lap. And Chitraketu, he makes some joking remark, and that this is not proper in the middle of all these sages. And so Shiva was very tolerant, but Parvati wasn't. And she cursed him to lose his position and to take the form of a demon, reborn as a demon. So Shiva has explained the great exalted nature of the Lord and his devotees here, and Parvati realizes that she overreacted. But on Chitraketu's part, just see the tolerance of this great devotee. Who does it call to mind? King Parikit himself, who is hearing this Bhagavatam 7 days. He also had the power to counteract the curse of little Sringi, who was a Brahmin by birth and had the power of a Brahmin, but didn't have the maturity to see who should be cursed and who shouldn't be cursed. So he overreacted, as a child might. But the power was there. The power to call this snake bird to kill Parikit in 7 days. So Parikit saw it as the will of the Lord, the providence. And he took advantage of that opportunity. He knew that he would be leaving his body in 7 days. And so he sat down on the bank of the Ganges, some say the Yamuna, and fasting till death, and all the great sages and rishis and devotees arrived, and finally, of course, Shukadev came, and we're hearing the recitation there. So Chitraketu has also been cursed, and he's taking it as the mercy of Krishna. This is the sadhu lakshanam. This is the quality of the devotee. It's a very difficult quality to get. It's much easier to tolerate physical austerities than it is insults, especially from respectable persons. But this is the illustration here. We call to mind here the sadhu lakshanam, the quality of devotees that great sadhus that are mentioned by Lord Kapiladeva. The very first one is tolerance, isn't it? Titikshava. Karunika sudiduk sarva dehina majata shutta vakshanda sarva sarabhushanam. Sarabhushanam, sarulakshanam, practically synonymous. The ornaments of a sadhu begins with this tolerance. And really, in the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is a central quality. That's why Srila Prabhupada refers to this famous verse, Trinadapi Suni Chena, Toror. Sahishnuna means tolerant, like a tree. The tree is the emblem of tolerance, standing for hundreds of years sometimes, all kinds of inclement weather, blasting wind and cold, rain, hail, you know, and heat, and doesn't complain. And yet it gives the fruit, gives the flowers, the shade, even gives of its own body. Right? The woodsman comes, cut it down, and turn it into New York Times or whatever. Prabhupada said, they're wasting so much paper on this new big bunch papers every day, especially Sunday. But the tree's not complaining. So Krishna, in his pastimes, after he had stolen the clothes of the gopis, there's another pastime in that chapter where he's walking around in the forest with his friends and he's praising the trees. And he gives the trees as an example of, as I said, tolerance and also munificence. And then he says, Etava janma sapalyam dehinam hidehishu prana arta dhya vacha shre acharanam sada. The famous verse, probably would quote this verse, that human beings, to make their lives fruitful, janma sapalyam, should, for other human beings, or other living entities, human beings and others, should do good, shaya acharanam sada, should act for their welfare. How? With their prana, artha, dhiya, vacha. With their life force, with their wealth, with their words, with their intelligence. And this is another great symptom of a real sadhu. And these two go together. Sometimes we don't see how they go together. Tolerance and compassion. Because compassion and mercy means that you approach those, because we understand that the real welfare work in this world is to give people Krishna in the form of the books, the holy name, the prasadam, the sangha, and all of the aspects that Srila Prabhupada has given us for our elevation and also as gifts to give to others. So that's not an easy task, because everyone is mad. Like people are sick, they're ill with this bhava roga, the disease of birth and death, and bewildered by the modes of nature. And so they don't know what is best for them. This is the whole problem. First of all, they don't know they have a problem. Well, they think they have a problem, but they don't know what the real problem is. They think the problem is they don't have enough money, she doesn't love me, he doesn't love me, so many different things. My mortgage was just canceled, my boss doesn't like me. There's a whole list. And then there's the diseases, you know, you may have. But the idea that we're trapped in this web, you know, this prison house, rather, of birth and death, and that there is a way out completely, where all your problems will be solved because you'll get transcendental. This is transcendental to the body itself. This is not understood by people. So we have the knowledge. We've been given it. We may not have realized it all, but we have it in the form of the books and our understanding. And so we have a responsibility to give it, but people don't want it. So Prabhupada gives the example of a delirious patient on a bed in a hospital. A doctor comes to give the injection or some kind of treatment, and the person thinks they're the enemy. He's come to kill me, you know, and they're fighting him off and cursing him and yelling and screaming. So does the doctor turn on his heel and walk out? No, they may use some restraints if necessary, but they still give the treatment, even though so many insults are being, you know, hurled. Because you understand, the person is crazy. So there has to be tolerance for the greater good, you see. And therefore, tolerance and compassion go together. And that's why, tatikshava karunika. Right away they go together. There's a nice passage in the fifth canto, Lord Rishabdev, is teachings. These verses, you know, we've had for so many years now. Matsevam dvaravahu vimuktes tomo dvam dvaram yoshitam sangi sangam mahantas samachitta prashanta vimunyavak sudadaksaravoye. Now, in this canto, I'll tell you what this means in a minute. This is part of the big marathon. Devotees know 17 books in 2 months back in 1975. So the fifth canto was part of that marathon, and this is in the fifth canto. So there's some interesting things that might not have gotten, you know, that might not have manifested in other cantos. Anyway, so this verse, Lord Rishabdev is saying to his sons, service to the Mahatmas, the sadhus, opens wide the doors to liberation. Mahatsayavam dvaram ahavamuktes. Tamo dvaram yoshitang sangi sangam. An association with those materialists who are too much attached to sex life opens the doors to hell. Darkness. Very stark, you know. So then the question will be asked by the intelligent person. Okay, who's the Mahatmas? I want to go to associate with them. Who are they? What's the qualities? So he gives two lines there. Mahanta, synonym for Mahatma. Samachitta, prashanta, they're very peaceful, self-realized. Samachitta, they see everyone equally. And vimunyavak sudiduksaravirya. So they are non-envious. They don't get angry. And the synonym, Prabhupada gives the thing I remember about this purport is it's not in the purport, it's in the synonym. Synonyms, word by word meanings. The manyavak, that one has to be free of anger or envy, and said one has to approach the conditioned souls, this is all in the synonyms, and without getting angry, and try to give them Krishna consciousness. You remember that? Very telling. So this is the whole point. It's easy enough to be tolerant if you're sitting alone in a room, you know, climate controlled, everything, you know, no one's bothering you. I'm very tolerant. But when you go out and people are insulting you, or you're, you know, it's cold or it's too hot or some other thing happens, you know. In other words, overcoming the difficulties in order to show compassion. This is what, to the conditioned souls, this is what attracts Krishna's attention. And we saw how tolerant Srila Prabhupada was, you know, especially in those early days when he was first starting it. I mean, it was always tolerant. But it's especially telling when he came to America and he had no following, nobody knew anything. They didn't know who Prabhupada was, you know. He has a big feast. He cooks the feast on the Sunday, and then everyone leaves, and then he cleans up after. Or he's standing in line, waiting to get into the take a shower behind his bhaktas. Can you imagine? You know, okay. You know, so many things. All for the sake. It's just like a little child, you know, is kicking the mother, passing stool. You know, she's tolerant. It's for the, you know, she loves the child. So this is the sign of the great devotees. And Chitraketu was in that mood. And he saw it, okay, this is my mother. This comes up several times. Mother, you know, the universal mother is Parvati. And she's cursed me now. I accept it. It's for the ultimate good. And we see that the pastime goes on, you know, and how Chitraketu ultimately takes birth, not as a demon, but as demon on the outside, devotee on the inside. You know, he looks like a big demon, Vritrasura. He's called Asura. But ultimately, in the final analysis, he's this great devotee, Chitraketu. And he has these prayers at the end. So the pastime goes on, and he's invoked by Tvashta, whose son Vishwarup was killed by Indra. It's most amazing. You know, he'd come to be the guru. Vrihaspati had been insulted by Indra, and so he's gone. So the demigods become weak because they have no spiritual master. You know? And the demons take advantage, take over the heavenly planets. So how to get them back? So they need another spiritual master. So Tvashta says, okay, my son can take over. So he said, my son is Vishwarup, and he'll help you. He has these three heads. But he also has some lineage coming from the demon. So he's, through his mother, I think it was. So he's also offering some oblations on that side. And Indra sees that. You can kind of visualize him behind a pillar watching, you know. Loses it, as he wants to do, and cuts off his heads. Three of them. Just like that. Now, this is his, you know, this is his guru now. He's, you know, this is a serious offense. So Tvashta, he becomes supremely angry. And he has a sacrifice, and he's going to invoke a demon to kill Indra. So he says this, but he chants one line wrong. And so instead of getting a demon to kill Indra, he gets a devotee dressed as a demon whom Indra will kill. So this is why we have to be very careful how we pronounce these mantras. And I'll just give you one example. Every morning, hopefully every morning, we all come to Mangalarti, and we're chanting these prayers to the spiritual master. And the last one is very critical. Yasya prasara bhagavat prasara yasya prasara nagati katopi. So the meaning, I hope you know what the meaning is, by the mercy of the spiritual master, one gets the mercy of Krishna. Without the mercy of the spiritual master, there's no means of advancement. Nagati katopi. Now the phrase is yasya prasara, means by the mercy of his mercy. And the second one is yasya prasada. If you don't have that long A, that second A has to be long, then what you're saying is, by his mercy, there's no means of advancement. Does that make any sense? No. By his non-mercy, by the uprasada, you know, it's like the difference between not and putting the not in there and leaving the not out. So remember that. Next time you sing Mangalarti, just say it, put that A in there. Yasya prasada nagati. So anyway, back to our pastime. So then, eventually, of course, Indra, there's a whole lot of things that I won't go over, and Indra is killing Vritrasura. I mean, Vritrasura is the leader of the demons, but really he wants to be killed. Leave this demon's body and then really go back to Godhead. So he's goaded Indra on, and Indra finally realizes, oh my God, You know, he's a great devotee because he's speaking, you know, like a devotee. And Indra's invincible by this time. He's got the Narayana Kavacha. He's got the thunderbolt made from the Dichi's bones, you know. But he realizes that he's in the worst position because now he's going to kill another Brahmin. He's already killed Vishwarup, son of a Brahmin. Now he's killing Vitrasa, who's also son of a Brahmin. He was invoked from the fire, you see. So he realized, boy, I'm going to have a lot of sinful reactions to suffer. And sure enough, it happens. But he can't stop now. So he eventually kills. But as he's, just before he dies, he has these beautiful prayers where he reveals his real nature. And I'll share one of them with you. Aham hadetava paraika mulam dasan udasam bhavidasmi buhiyam. He just visualizes this huge demon with no hands, no legs, bleeding. And he's offering his prayer up to his Lord. So this is what the prayer means. He's praying, when will I again, O Lord of my life, Asupadeya, have the, O Lord of my life, when will I again have the association, become the servant, be able to become the servant of your servants? Of your lotus feet. Ahang hareta vaparaika mula, who are exclusively devoted to your lotus feet, pure devotees. Because by their association, I will again be able to remember you, my mind will be able to remember you. Manaks smater, asupatir gunangste, I'll remember your qualities, and gunita vak, my voice will be used in glorifying you, and my body will be used in performing services for you. So this is a wonderful prayer. We can also adopt this prayer. Actually, we've been given the chance of having the association of devotees. How fortunate that is, because we can do these three things. Without the association of devotees, how are you going to hear the qualities of Krishna? Is it? How are you going to be inspired to glorify Krishna or use your limbs and your senses for serving Krishna? Is it? The default in this material world is to use those things for your own gratification. And therefore we need that sangha. And this is what Srila Prabhupada works so hard, being tolerant, as Chitraketu is, and setting up this society, writing these books, growing the society, managing it, setting up a system where it will be managed after he departed. So many austerities, you know, for the sake of the benefit of the conditioned souls and for the pleasure of his guru, Dev, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Krishna, Radha and Krishna. This should be our model. This is our wonderful, exemplary sadhu, greatest sadhu is Srila Prabhupada. And he embodies this lakshana, this symptom of the sadhu, which is tolerance. Even though so many difficulties come, in this case, his curse, he still tolerates and takes it as, oh, this is Krishna's test, this is Krishna's gift, and I embrace it. That's the real test of a Vaishnava. So I'll read the verse again, the translation. The great devotee Chitraketu was so powerful that he was quite competent to curse Mother Parvati in retaliation. But instead of doing so, he very humbly accepted the curse and bowed his head before Lord Shiva and his wife. This is very much to be appreciated as the standard behavior of a Vaishnava. One other thing, Prabhupada quotes this verse, doesn't give a translation. Narayana paraksave nukatashchena bibhiti svargapa varga nadakesha patulyata darshana. That the symptom of one is Narayana para, who is devoted to Narayana, devotee, is that he doesn't have any fear that heaven and hell are the same. In other words, wherever he is, he's glorifying Krishna, and therefore he's happy. Just as Prahlad says, wherever I am, and he exemplified that, in the middle of the pot of boiling oil, he's still very peacefully and joyfully chanting the glories of Krishna, and he's protected. This is the power of the Vaishnava. And so that freedom from fear is a very important aspect. This world is saturated with that. The fear. All of the sense gratification, these things, the diversions, the entertainment, is just trying to so we can forget the fearful nature of this world. Dukkali mashashvatam. But a devotee faces it, this is the nature of this world, but because he feels the protection of Krishna at every moment, he doesn't actually fear anything. This is a tremendous gift that Krishna gives. So that's what Chitraketu was, the state of his consciousness. He didn't fear even becoming a demon. And so it's a great example. Archita Prabhu?
Thank you for a wonderful question.
Hare Krishna, go ahead.
Question on this point of tolerance. How do we know when to tolerate and when not to? For instance,
you know, sometimes we're attacked directly. Like now in Australia and elsewhere, temples are being attacked. Should we tolerate when somebody attacks, or do we retaliate? I mean, there are six kinds of enemies that can be killed according to the Vedas, six kinds of offenders or attackers. So how do you know when to apply that and when to just tolerate?
Right. Good question. Thank you. So, Prabhupada makes it clear in other places that the devotee tolerates any affront to himself, but he doesn't tolerate any affront to another Vaishnav or to the Supreme Lord, to the Guru, like that. And so certainly we shouldn't tolerate an attack on the temple or the deities, whatever, or devotees, other devotees. But when we're insulted by somebody on the street or something like that, or even, and this is really perhaps more usual or something that we experience more often, but some other devotee we feel has dealt with us unfairly or whatever. That's the test, to tolerate and go on with one's devotional service. The worst thing is to feel so affronted and so bad that you leave the association of devotees. This is actually the greatest punishment. Right? The greatest suffering, it is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is to be bereft of the association of devotees. Better to be in a cage surrounded by fire than to be forced to associate with non-devotees. And you know, you have to associate with someone. If you're not going to associate with devotees, you can end up associating with the non-devotees. And that's the great bane of this material world. So somehow or other, we need to be able to live harmoniously amongst devotees. And because we're at various levels of advancement, there will be friction and ashram and so forth and things that happen. So the best thing is to tolerate those so-called affronts that we may feel amongst the devotees, but do not tolerate affronts or insults or blasphemy toward the deity, the spiritual master, other devotees, the Dham, so forth. And living in the middle of, you know, Los Angeles, naturally, people come, they have no idea of the proper behavior, and so they need to be instructed, and we need to protect the purity of the environment and our own bhakti creeper, by knowing when to become angry. Srila Prabhupada became angry. He sometimes became angry at us, you know, for doing nonsense. But that was a great gift. Those who were received that anger were actually grateful. If they were a little mature, they understood that this is the gift of the Vaishnava, the sadhu. What is that? It says, I forget how the Sanskrit goes, but once you give up bad association and good association, take on good association, what is it? Yeah. Because by their words, the great sadhus, they cut off the attachment in one's heart, the material attachment. Manovyasangam ukti bi. Chindandi manovyasangam ukti bi. Tato duksangam utsajja satsu sajjaitu. Buddhiman. If you're intelligent, then you give up bad association and you associate with the devotees. And sadhu evasya chindandi manavyasaga muktibi. So that's the gift of the great sadhus and Vaishnavas, is to care enough to chastise us if we need it and encourage us if we deserve it. So this is necessary. But you could see that anger was different. You know, if someone is in the mode of passion and becomes angry at someone else because of the affront, that anger is polluting. And generally it doesn't go away. You know, you establish a grudge and even a vendetta, right? And that's the worst thing for your bhakti creeper, to be nourishing a grudge against another devotee. It may have happened 25 years ago, and you're still thinking, oh, this person is my enemy. You know, I'll never associate with them. If I happen to see them at some festival, I'll turn my back. You know, right. That's happened. I've seen it. You're chanting Hare Krishna. Oh, your mood is gone. You've forgotten about the holy name. Now you're thinking, here's my archenemy. They kicked me out of the temple back in 1973. It's happened. Just let it go. You know, we're going to be gone from this body in a couple of days. You know, what's the point? So that kind of tolerance, that comes, you know, you have to be able to drink the nectars of, you know, association, kirtan, service. And then that pain is just, it just leaves. It doesn't happen. Any other comments, question? Yes, Prabhu.
You would call in that verse, etavanjana sarvalyana, by words, mind, and intelligence, one should
do well, good work, welfare work.
And obviously, it requires tolerance and compassion. So I remember about 25 years ago, I was with a devotee who at one point just told me, I can't do it anymore. This is too much for me. I can't take too much calories with these people. And then his explanation, his understanding was because I'm a kshatriya.
So what was the explanation?
I am a kshatriya.
A kshatriya.
Kshatriya, we can't take this much. And I said, no, Prabhupada came to make brahmas. Besides that, Kalosuva Sambhavaya realized that sutra, but he was stubborn in this firm conviction that he was a kshatriya. So the same process that completed liberation, he was rejecting it.
Well, you know, Prabhupada recognized that you know, being on the battlefield takes its toll, in the sense that he wanted us to, of course, have strong sadhana in the temple. You know, these temples are bases in which you send out, you know, your the soldiers to the field. But he also wanted us to go to Mayapur every year, you know, where there's take a month or, you know, more and just do bhajan, right? Just drink in the holy dham, chant so many rounds and just straight, you know, Krishna consciousness, away from those who are going to insult you and the difficulty of it. So the thing is, one shouldn't give up the fight, but one should monitor one's own consciousness and, if need be, withdraw for a while, chant and hear, association, things like that. In other words, it's a long haul, and everybody is different. You know, it's a long haul. And we want to try to stay in the Sankirtan movement as long as possible, so that we can, you know, be plugged in to the benediction moon. I forgive the mixed metaphor, but you understand. And so therefore, we need to maintain our spiritual health as well as our physical health. Sometimes it's physical health gets weak, and then we become less tolerant, you know, because there's too much coming at you at one time. So you need to have a program, a daily program, but sometimes take more time, where you just charge your batteries and you become, cleanse some of the things that inevitably accumulate in years. But that idea that, oh, I'm a kshatriya, therefore I can't take the insults, that's not correct, you know. I mean, one can have that fighting spirit, but as part of the Sankirtan movement, one can use it only against those who are really insulting other devotees or the deities, not against, you know, the poor karmis who don't have any idea what's going on. So really, that the fighting spirit is sublimated, if you will, or directed, channeled into fighting against one's internal enemies, That's also an enemy, right? Kamesha Kodesha. Even Arjuna is certainly a chatur. Krishna says your real enemy is inside. Is it lust and anger and so forth? So that sounds like one of these things that a devotee, you know, may have an idea that he's taking on that idea, pulling it out of, you know, the scripture, but really he's feeling weak, you know, the tolerance. Yes, Prabhu. Oh, the mic.
Thank you.
How do you go?
I'm wondering, how is it possible? Prabhupada mentions that Chitraketu was powerful enough that he could have counter-cursed Mother Parvati, but he did not. I'm just wondering, like you explained also, just a short while ago, he was a king and was, you know, was consumed by illusion, and now he's like a great devotee of the Lord. How is it he would be powerful enough to actually curse the mother of the entire material nature?
Yeah, I wondered that. Pratishaptam, there it is, the counter curse or counteract a curse. Is it counter curse or counteract a curse? how can you curse, you know, Durga Devi? What would be the effect? Well, after all, I mean, from a philosophical point of view, she's also a servant of the Lord. So, if Krishna wants to make that possible, he can. In other words, he's the servant of Krishna, and if this is Krishna's plan, then there can be some curse. But I think that really what's being said here, well, it says competent to curse Mother Parvati in retaliation. You know, how we could have that strength? The only thing I could think of is that he's derived it from, you know, from Krishna. But at the same time, you know, it's almost a paradoxical, because the only way he has it is by being a pure devotee, but the symptom of a pure devotee, as explained here, is that he'll tolerate the curse. So it's almost like an oxymoron. He may have the power, but he'll never use it. Because the fact that he has the power gives him the tolerance that he won't use it. Okay, yes, Maharaji? Can someone needs to be in charge of, like, running this mic? No? Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your wonderful class.
Hare Krishna, glorious Prabhu.
My question is, does the principle of tolerance also apply to those people who love us so much but they're not devotees? For example, our parents and friends. And, like, if we become devotees, they're not. They're, like, we're very sad and they want to pull us out of love. So how do we deal with the situation for someone that loves us so much and they just can't keep us up?
Well, that's a good thing, because if someone loves you so much, then you become a devotee, then that's the best thing for them. Their attraction for you is based on, you know, bodily concern. You know, they have a relationship to you, a bodily relationship. And this is what the material world is all about. So they have a misguided understanding. I think, oh my God, they joined my daughter, my son, whatever, my brother, sister, they joined the cult, and now they're going to be harmed by this. And I don't, you know, this is terrible. But still they're attached to you. So you can use that attachment by calling them, trying to give them the parts of Krishna consciousness that are that they will see as attractive. Prasadam is a good way. And most important, they should see that you're healthy and happy. I remember my mother, who's passed away about 5-6 years ago now, for years, you know, I would come visit her. And she was never inimical, but she was wondering what I'm up to, you know. But she saw that I was, as the years gone by, I was healthy and happy. I may not have been rich, but I was healthy and happy. And basically the mother is happy to see that. And so finally she realized, oh, this is a good thing, you know. So by being a good devotee and by keeping contact through calls and letters and so forth, some occasional visit, but not compromising the principles, then when generally, gradually, the love, the ones who love you, they appreciate the process of Krishna consciousness. And by appreciating you, they also appreciate Krishna. This happened so many times when Prabhupada was on the planet. You know, the parents would come, They were usually charmed by Srila Prabhupada. They saw their beaming son or daughter, you know, blissful, who had been kind of morose before. They didn't know what they were doing. They were on drugs or something, and now they're, you know, shining and happy. So what mother's heart's not going to open says, well, yeah, actually, this is a good thing for them. You know, this is good. So you just have to, you know, I'm not sure you're asking, can they, are they going to tolerate, or are you going to tolerate? What?
Yeah, because sometimes when I see my parents, they're really sad because I joined this, and it's really hard for me to take.
So it's hard for you to take their sadness.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you need to tolerate that. And try to explain to them. In other words, they're going to listen to you. Generally, they'll listen to you. And if you explain what it's all about and how happy you are, and they see that, they feel that, you know, gradually they can be come around. Generally, but it's a shock because it's not on the radar. It's like you just, you know, went off to Madagascar somewhere, you know. I mean, they don't know, they can't compute, you know. And therefore, it's unknown. In the unknown, it's dangerous. But over time, you'll see they'll be happy. At least they'll be accepting. That's the best we can hope for. Okay, yeah, my katma. I don't know how long you want to go, but I'm your servant.
Just one quick comment. We're talking about how over time, relatives, parents, etc., they begin to appreciate it.
Generally.
I remember when I got married, I happened to be in the Detroit Temple at the time, and was helping with the management, and my parents had not been to a temple yet, and were sort of removed, but when they came for the wedding, the first thing they said was, wow, you have such a very nice house here. So they became very receptive to that.
Yeah. Krishna's arrangement, yeah. Thank you for that. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.